This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 280. Let's talk about the news. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on another wonderful Friday afternoon with my friend and co-host Michael Martin to talk about tech and games and work and the news. So what's up, Michael?
I have no news.
Okay, and that's the end of the show. Come back next time back. At GamesAtWork.
So this news thing is fun, isn't it? The latest update to iOS is what has enabled new news, and you've availed yourself already of said feature, haven't you?
Well, sort of. There's really two parts to this story, which is kind of interesting. This week, Apple started a daily kind of morning newscast. There's lots of these out there. NPR has one called, I listen to it every morning.
And start I'm going your day totally, with NPR.
Totally blanking on the name. It's not On the Media because that's a totally different show. They have one Up First, I think it's called, in the morning
because
it's
CBS Up First in the morning. Here. I've listened to that a little bit.
The Washington Post has one called The Daily 202. Which is interesting, and this one has added to my morning. Really, when I do my morning workout, I listen to the news that happened overnight. I also listen to one from Deutsche Welle, which is Langsame Nachrichten, which reads you the news from Germany slowly in German to improve your German, which is kind of fun because I do it at double speed, so it sounds normal.
Yep. So it's the fast version of the slow German news.
You still there?
I am. Are you still there?
Yeah, I accidentally pulled my headphone out.
Oh.
So we will edit that out. This is so much fun. Do you want to count it back in? So it happened right after I talked and you said then, and then you disappeared. Sorry.
All right, no worries. Yeah, and in 3, 2, 1. So you're listening to the sped up version of the slow German news then.
Exactly.
The schnelle, langsame Nachrichten.
Which could also be called normal.
Yeah. Oh, that's pretty fun. Well, I did update my phone to iOS 13.6 already. So I did notice this. I just hadn't clicked on the button to say, tell me the news.
Yeah, well, and that's the second half, right? And that's what the really cool thing here is. If you have Apple News Plus, so you're paying the, $9.99 a month to get access to various magazines, then they've also done audio stories from those magazines where someone actually reads the article to you, which, you know, that's interesting, but it's a person, not a robot. And what's really cool, and this is the part that I find fascinating, and it kind of goes into, you know, the whole concept of compute everywhere and having everything you want at any location, at any time, in any format, is it does a handoff. So you can be reading these stories and press a button, and it'll immediately switch you over to basically someone reading it to you. So let's say you're reading a story. Oh, I got to get to a meeting. I got to jump in the car. You get in the car. It immediately swaps it over to play audio while you're driving, and then you swap it back to text. And it remembers where everything starts and stops. So it becomes this seamless handoff to get all the content that you need in a convenient format while you are in a place where you need it in that format. And I thought that was kind of cool. It's really getting to that idea of a seamless transition between states, right? And that's something that I've been trying to work on myself in my personal app, dealing with handing off things between the status of a meeting between your watch and your phone and your tablet and your desktop. And that's hard work. It seems like it would just be so easy, but that's hard work.
Well, you're curating the experience based on the device and where your attention is. So, it's interesting that you think about it in those ways, because that should be unobtrusive, right? And in theory, though, if you are using a particular device to accomplish a particular task, right? So you're looking at the news on your phone and you put your phone down and then you pick up your tablet or you look at your watch or something like that. It shouldn't necessarily be that experience continues from one device to another, because theoretically your attention is shifting focus because you're shifting your attention, right?
But it's interesting. I get it. I understand it. And one of the other interesting things that I don't know if you caught this from all the WWDC hoopla. Mm. One of the other features that Apple talked about that's coming out with iOS 14 et al, right? Big Sur, yes. iPad OD, blah, 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 is dynamic handoff of your AirPods between devices.
Well, I did see that, and while I am not a ultra-heavy AirPods user, to me that is absolutely the magic that should be there when you think about an integrated Apple ecosystem. So if I put my phone down because I'm done listening to, you know, last week's edition of Games at Work .biz, and then I'm switching over to a video call on my Mac
.biz.
I would expect that the AirPods and the Mac and the phone should all be enough aware of one another to go, oh, Michael is done listening to the podcast. He's now operating on his Mac and he's joining a conference call. So I will switch the audio and pipe that into the AirPods. I would expect that to be the case. I'm not a power user as yet of my AirPods. So I've not encountered that being a restriction or a problem. But I do remember that too, Michael. I saw that on I think it was even on the keynote, wasn't it?
It was on the keynote, yeah. And supposedly it's been enabled in the betas. And I do have the AirPods Pro. I haven't figured out how to make it happen yet. I know, and maybe you know this trick too.
you just go into jiggle mode. That's
it. Yeah, you go into jiggle mode. That's it. Thanks, Emily. That if you are carrying your iPhone with you, and I know one of the things that drives me nuts, and I'll get back down to, I know, when you're in a meeting with a group of people and everybody takes their, you know, they walked in with their cell phones in their hands and they all sit around the table. Remember those days?
And they futz with their phone.
And they put them on the desk or on the table.
Yes.
And you're in the middle of the meeting and you hear brrr, ring, ding, 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 right? But if you take your iPhone and put it on the table face down. It goes into do not disturb silent mode.
Yes.
So I'm wondering, I haven't tried this yet, if that's the secret for the handoff between the phone and the desktop, right? Because in the house, you know, the distance between my MacBook Pro, my iPad, my phone, and my AirPods, you know, at any negligible given time is like inches. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it can figure out which one I'm using. But I think about the technical implementation of that to get it right, you know, 80% of the time for 80% of the people, right? That is the magic target for most of Apple stuff to make it seamless and convenient. So how it can figure out correctly when those handoffs should occur, because a lot of times I'm listening to a podcast on one of my devices, either the iPad or the iPhone, while working on something on my Mac, right? Just to keep work and other stuff separated. So this is a tough problem, and just that handoff of the news, as you described, of just because I went from the phone to my watch, why would I want to listen to it still, right? You know, getting that right is going to be interesting. So,
I think it's exciting. Or terribly annoying, you know, if it's wrong, it'll be super annoying. But, supposition. I have an idea.
Okay.
The idea is, while we certainly have the light sensor on a phone to help, you know, gauge if you've got it face down on a table or chair or floor or whatever surface you put it on, you also have the accelerometer. So, and the gyroscope. So if you're holding a device, those are active, right?
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, it's logical to think that maybe that's where your attention is, although you could have your phone in your pocket. So,
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's
an interesting, tough problem. And one of the things, just to kind of continue, because I'm sure there's, you know, on-device machine learning happening to get it right over time, right?
Yep.
One of the things that I find really annoying is I don't like having everything in my inbox in mail. So I am very fastidious about filing things into folders. Right? It's something I do.
Yes.
I read it and I file it. I read it and I file it. I read it, I respond, and I file it, right? Get it out of the inbox. I like inbox
zero.
Sounds
like you file things.
I file things, and then I put it in a Ziploc, and then wrap that in tin foil, and staple the... we need a good reference to the anal retina fisherman in there.
chef.
And check. So Siri does a really good job over time of knowing where I'm going to file emails from certain people, right?
Ooh.
And it says, oh, you want it over there? I'm like, you got it. But since rebuilding my development devices with iOS 14, all of that is lost because it's
on
device.
It was machine learning
on
device.
Yeah. And so it just kind of shows you the good and the bad of on device. However, last night, we watched the movie The Circle. Have you seen that?
It sounds obtuse.
So this came out in 2017, and I remember hearing about it back then, but I had no recollection of what it was about or anything.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what it is at all.
Oh, so it's Tom Hanks, Emma Thompson, a whole slew of other recognizable actors. And it's about somebody working at a social media company on the West Coast that has this giant circular campus and is consuming everybody's data to drive their profits. So it's a scary movie in many ways. But it's funny because they've taken basically Facebook, Google and Apple and munge them together into like the worst of all worlds.
Colossal corp.
Yeah. And if you want to like delete a bunch of stuff off your phone,
yeah,
watch this first and you will have no doubt that you want to do that. And you will do that and you'll delete everything. So anyway, roundabout way.
Scary. Related to that, there is a news topic that came out of the European courts around the invalidation of the privacy shield. When I saw that, it's like, yowza, that's going to put all kinds of interesting companies on notice about where data processing is handled.
Yeah. I
didn't dig deeply into it, but it's like, wow.
I heard about that. Was it yesterday?
Yeah.
I think
because it was Wednesday Thursday. It was Thursday morning. European time is
European. And the interesting thing about that is, you know, how many years has it been now that GDPR has been in place?
It's been around for a while,
right? And so this to me is a logical progression of that. And the net of the case, obviously not an attorney, don't even play one on TV. I have been one on stage a lot, though, but that's a different story. is the fact that the European court has decided that U.S. companies' privacy regulation
is insufficient.
Is insufficient, and if they want to do business in the EU, they need to have the data in the EU where those privacy laws and regulations are sufficient. Yeah. And they're not allowed to transfer the data onto US-based servers because they feel it loses the protection based off of the legal structure in the US. That's going to be tough, real tough for a lot of businesses. It's going to have impact to business models, let alone just, you know, infrastructure and machine learning and all that other stuff. Very interesting.
Yes, and that privacy shield was something that took a while to put into place and make sure everything was ticked and tied, so to speak.
Yeah.
And the other intriguing angle, and I wish Andy was here because we could bring it up with him too, is that when you think about Brexit and where things are going next, that means that Britain is not in Europe, and therefore the same deal would apply.
Yes. Wow. That's a lot of news.
Yeah.
That's a lot of news. So let's talk about, you know, one of the things that you think about when you think about machine learning is robots, obviously, right?
Well, who wouldn't? They're machines. Wouldn't they learn?
They're machines and they learn. So I remember a lot of, you know, robotic companies that were in stealth mode and not hearing much about them other than, hey, there's a new company in stealth mode, right? And there's a new one that's come out of stealth mode. Hello, robot.
it doesn't look like a kitty, does it?
No, but it's actually really done some cool stuff with arms and controlling those arms to do things like vacuuming your couch, handing you a beer. And this is interesting. Came out of a Georgia Tech group. Who then went to Google in robotics and is now in the Bay Area with his stealth startup coming public. It's only about $18,000 for the development platform, so I think, you know, you should get one and I'll play with it.
Oh, yeah, well, you'd have to be socially distanced if that were the case.
Well, but that's what you have the robot for, right? I mean, it's pulling laundry out of the dryer. I mean, this is kind of cool. And it makes sense, right? The degrees of freedom that they've set up, and I'm sure there's a lot of learning. I remember one that we talked about, gosh, it must have been a couple of years ago, where the way you trained the robot was you did the thing, mm-hmm. and it matched it. You remember that one?
Yes. I mean, it was almost a mocap-y sort of thing, as I recall. Yeah, yeah.
The other interesting thing about this one, they don't describe that I've read yet, and I haven't gone through, you know, all the reference material or anything. They don't describe exactly how you train it, but it does look like
robot.
Yeah, bad. that it has, and there was another one I want to say from MIT that was doing stuff with soft grips, so it wouldn't crush things
like an egg or something like that. Yeah, yes, I remember that.
The hand on this one looks to have similar type characteristics. So this is interesting. I think this is becoming better at a little general usage in a home setting. Obviously, it looks like it will probably have problems with stairs.
Well, yes, because it's got that base, and you're kind of moving around that way. What I like about it too is that this is very obviously a robot for robot's sake, and not something that is trying to be cutesy or, you know, a conversation partner, but something that you
get the job done
tasks that would be helpful. So, you know, if you can't bend down easily to get laundry in and out, you know, that could help, or put things away in a cupboard. Gosh, yep. wish my kids might.
I wonder if you can train the kids.
Well, the short answer to that is no.
No.
that wet, wet software stuff that's kind of tricky. But
yes.
But I probably could train my kids to play a game, you know.
Probably a game that some of us may have played years ago on the NES.
That would be a good thing. I would imagine they would be really happy playing, you know, something like that they could turn a crank and catch the mouse and hide in the trap and all that stuff. That would be fun.
What was that? That was Mousetrap that you're talking about.
That was Mousetrap, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Which I never actually played. I played Hungry Hungry Hippos, though. That was fun. Oh,
that was good fun.
So this is really cool. Both TechCrunch and The Verge must have gotten the same PR press release, because the video or the GIF that they have is almost the same, if not the same, right? So Lego and NES have come together to put out a new 2,600-odd-piece kit that allows you to simulate playing Super Mario Brothers. And it's kind of cool. It's the base station, so the console. It got its own little TV, and you build it out of Legos, and it has kind of the, you know, cyclorama. Is that what they called it? Where you have the image that rotates around an axis, and you can see all the different parts as it scrolls by, and it looks like it's moving. And so they've got a little Super Mario guy, and he jumps up and down based off of this band of Legos that give you the perspective of jumping over stuff and bouncing up and down on the blocks, etc.
Mm-hmm. I actually had to do a double take when I first saw this, because the NES system itself looked real.
Yeah.
You know, it looked, and I know that was redundant, but still, I mean, it looked like, it's like, oh, well, could you play this? And they're like, oh, wait a minute, that's all Lego, right?
It's all Lego. And you can probably blow on the cartridge for this one too, right?
You probably could. You probably could. But
boy, I've never seen a flexible wire, though, in Lego like that to give you the adapter for the controller.
I have. They've made those sort of things before. I thought it was pretty cute, too, to have the icon or the brand name for the TV called Low Tech. That was a fun little.
Yes, it's definitely low tech. Yeah, now this is hilarious. And, you know, I know you and Andy have much more Lego than I do now. So which one are you going to get it?
Don't know. I mean, I wasn't as much of a Nintendo fan. Certainly not, you know, my Mario, we've talked about this, was the Mario that we used to play on the Apple II.
Yes.
Because that was fun to do multiplayer killer Mario. And that's what I like to play. So this doesn't have the same nostalgia for me as it might for a bunch of others.
But so you're not a Nintendo guy. Are you an Xbox guy?
You know, no, I've never owned an Xbox, actually. So that would be...
Neither have I. I'm not a console guy. Really, the only console I have or had, I still have it somewhere, it's boxed up, is the Wii, and a very, very old but new replica of the Atari 2600. If you consider that a console, I guess it was.
Yeah, I think it fits.
Ish. So Microsoft is coming out with their Series X soon, and they're officially discontinuing the Xbox One X and their Xbox One S digital edition. I know the PS5 just had their big announcements on the design and everything recently. I don't know when that's available in the stores, but again, didn't have a PS3, 4, or 5 for that matter, or 2. But I'm a PC gamer. I built the new rig recently, is rocking on. So, but I know we have listeners who are big console users, and I'm wondering how many of them care about this. I would assume they already have it. If they cared about the Xbox, they've already got one of these.
Well, yeah,
and
but
they're
the
probably looking forward to the next gen.
Is that Microsoft is now reserving their supply and their supply chain for the next gen, especially in light of all the announcements come out from Sony. So makes a lot of sense. And also think about the whole supply chain story around other pieces of the puzzle too, like Nintendo's Switch, which remains, I think Andy used the words hen's teeth, right? So for those of you who really, really want to play Animal Crossing 2, maybe there's an emulator out there somewhere. So you could jump in and be part of it. But it makes sense to me that Microsoft is like, okay, we're reserving our capacity and supply chain now for the next one, and to have that timeout and be in the competitive state with Sony, because that's really the two main platforms these days.
And you had the PS2, right?
Yeah, we still do. And it's funny because with our foster kitten setup, we have a little TV console upstairs where the foster kittens are, and we've had to cardboard all that up to avoid the kittens from getting behind the television, stuck, lost, whatever. So,
well, you know where they're at.
There's no chance right now to play to play anything on that environment because it's all cardboarded up.
Yeah,
you kittens, you.
That's what they're there for, though.
Yep, 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 yep. Give so, interesting thing for them that like Microsoft environment. So, more power to our friends in Red.
Yep, and another one of these stories that is interesting and in a way kind of a no-duh stories. So, for the first time since 2014, there have been more App Store downloads in the U.S. than there have been in China.
Well, and that's interesting given relative population size. Does the article say anything about the market penetration, like how many devices to companies, to countries?
It doesn't, but there should be no surprise that there's been a massive uptake on business and educational apps
in the
downloads, right? All the people who are stuck at home who are having to download, you know, Zoom or WebEx or, you know, Office onto their mobile devices as a way to keep working. This is one of these ones that, like I said, it's kind of a, no kidding. But at the same time, it's like, wow, you know, this shows the impact on the number of people, in my opinion, who can work from home, right? And because you have that high capacity based off of the type of jobs that are in the U.S., more service jobs, less manufacturing where you physically have to be somewhere.
Yeah.
This is one of these stories that you think for a second, makes complete sense.
Yep, so, and you can look at that, you know, just the percentage increases for these other countries here over them as well, and the relative decrease in things like, hey, look, navigation downloads kind of a little bit lower because if you don't know where your front door is, you know, that's...
The other surprising thing here is... And I guess this is all iOS, all Apple ecosystem, so they don't have the Android view on here.
Right,
because it's iPhone versus iPad. The iPad downloads as a percent of iPhone downloads is
relatively small.
I'll say 10%, round number 10%. Just eyeballing the chart, right? Which is probably about equal to market penetration.
Well, it's either that or they're also, depends on how they're counting it, right? Because if I downloaded Zoom first to my phone and then also put it on my iPad, is that two downloads or is it one?
Two.
It should be two.
Well, I know that for a fact. So
from your developer experience, yes.
Yeah. So in App Connect, which allows me to track downloads of my app, you can tell how many are downloaded on an iPhone versus on a watch versus on an iPad. So
Sensor Tower must have a way to measure that too, because you have in App Connect your ability to look and say, I'd like to know what utilities have been done.
Yeah, but if Sensor Track is, or Sensor Tower, right, is using any type of proxy like data coming across the network, you're still going to have a device identifier to some degree in order to identify which device type it's coming from. So I would assume that metadata is available, and that's what they're capturing in flight, so to speak. Now, to get to this level of data, though, I would think they have to be pulling data from telcos and cable companies.
Going back to your circle movie thing.
There. Yeah.
Circling right back, aren't we?
I'm just saying, you might want to watch that movie.
Maybe. Now, there's
or games, you might not ever want to watch that movie.
Maybe not. There's a bunch of games, though, where they're showing the App Store in the U.S., and I have to say that of the list of games there, I probably know about like 20%. Maybe a little scary, but maybe that many of these games are, you know, the free to pay version of games, and so that's why I'm not.
Yeah, I'm looking at them. I think I know three of them.
like Coin Master, you know.
Roblox, I've heard of. Call of Duty Mobile, I've heard of. Yeah, and Fortnite.
Yep.
Maybe Tower Run sounds familiar. That's it. Wow.
Super Salon. Oh, that should be pretty interesting. I guess, you know, if you can't go stylish to the real place and get your hair cut. I like it.
So, I know we're just about out of time.
Yes, we are.
And there's just one more story that I found this week that just... So, one of the things that I used to always get on my gaming rig all the way back, gosh, into the 90s, right? So, more than 20 years now, is Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Yep.
One of the things I've always loved about it was how well the world rendering is. And I would go and fly out of Honolulu Airport around the island of Oahu to find those places that when I was working in Oahu, I used to go to visit. And I would literally like buzz my apartment, fly the beach of Waikiki, go around to Diamond Head, you know, et cetera. And they have just announced the release of, what is it, the 35th edition or something? 38 years of Flight Simulator.
Bonkers.
The new one on August 18th coming out. If you get Xbox Game Pass or whatever they call it, it's included.
Oh.
I do not get Xbox Game Pass. It's roughly $60, which is on par with how they've always priced it. But it is gorgeous. I am constantly amazed at how well they push the envelope on Flight Simulator, just in the realism. And if you're like me and you like flying, period, put it in easy mode. Get this game, put it in easy mode. Turn everything up to the maximum level of realism, except for the flight controls themselves. And just enjoy some beautiful vistas. This looks fantastic.
So I'm just looking at what's included here, and I saw a link somewhere I was talking about if you get it, not digital form, but you get the hard copy version, which I suspect it would be what you do. It was like, isn't it like 10 DVDs worth of data?
It's a lot.
It's like huge.
I know in 2004, I think was the last one I bought, and that was 4 DVDs back then.
Mm-hmm.
And just think of the scale of improvement of... Oh, sorry, that was 4 CDs back then. They didn't put it on DVDs yet.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly.
So that would have been 8 gig of content. No, CDs were 640. So that would have been 2.4 gig of compressed content back then when a 40 gig, 50 gig hard drive was a big deal, right?
So I'm looking for Honolulu Airport on... It's got to be there.
It always has been there, and it better be there or I'm going to be very upset.
Because it's got standard, deluxe, and premium editions. So, like, if you really want to get Frankfurt, you got to go for the...
Yeah.
You know, those are ones that I know exactly as I'm coming in to San Francisco, where the In-N-Out Burger is... You know, just outside of the airport, so you can see it on the way in. You land, you get your rental car, you go to In-N-Out Burger, and
I don't see Honolulu on here. Oh,
no. I don't either. I don't either. But
why
maybe
would they
these
take
are...
it away? It's so beautiful. And then you fly over the Missouri in Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm. So
they showed a picture though in one of the videos, and I saw Diamond Head in the background.
Okay, good. So maybe these are just like, you know, additional airports or something. So my little fun story, if I look over my shoulder and do it carefully so I don't get a crick in my neck, I have on my shelf a copy of Flight Simulator. I don't know if I ever told you this, Michael, but it's one of those weird things that I did pretty soon after 9/11, which was I went out and I bought a copy of Flight Simulator, and if I'm memory serves, towers. It has the Twin Towers on the cover. It is still in the shrink wrap. I never opened it. I just was like, I wanted to have the software just to have it.
Yeah, cool.
Yep. Oh, all right, well, we are out of time. Yeah.
And we appreciate all the links and the feedback and the engagement that we get from you, our listeners. Keep them coming. We'd love to hear from you. And we will be back next time at Games at Work.
GamesAtWork.biz.
Biz.
Biz.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.